The Song of Solomon is indeed an amazing book, and we've been going through the book slowly. We've come all the way through chapter 6, and now we are at chapter 7, which I suppose is the most erotic chapter in the entire Bible. I know that the Jews would not allow their kids to read it, I think, until they were 30 years old. That's pretty amazing, and I think this chapter is why. There's a lot of things in it that they say are even more graphic in the Hebrew, but we'll talk about some of these things. My name is Stephen Medford. I'm your host this morning for this Monday edition of Mornings for the Master, and we are in chapter 7 of the Song of Solomon. It is interesting that in the Greek Bible and the Hebrew Bible both, chapter 7 begins with what we have as the last verse of chapter 6. Chapter 6, verse 13. So I'm going to read chapter 7, starting with chapter 6 and verse 13. It says, "Return, return, O Shulamite, return, return, that we may look upon you. What would you see in the Shulamite, as it were the dance of the two camps?" Then chapter 7 starts, "How beautiful are your feet in sandals, O prince's daughter! The curves of your thighs are like jewels, the work of the hands of a skillful workman. Your navel is a rounded goblet. It lacks no blended beverage. Your waist is a heap of wheat set about with lilies. Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle. Your neck is like an ivory tower. Your eyes like the pools in Heshbon by the gate of Bath-Rabban. Your nose is like the Tower of Babylon, which looks toward Damascus. Your head crowns you like Mount Carmel, and the hair of your head is like purple. A king is held captive by your tresses. How fair and how pleasant you are, O love, with your delights. This stature of yours is like a palm tree, and your breast like its clusters. I said, I will go up to the palm tree. I will take hold of its branches. Now let your breast be like clusters of the vine, the fragrance of your breath like apples, and the roof of your mouth like the best wine. The wine goes down smoothly for my beloved, moving gently the lips of sleepers. I am my beloved's, and his desire is toward me. Come, my beloved, let us go forth to the field. Let us lodge in the villages. Let us get up early to the vineyards. Let us see if the vine has budded, whether the grape blossoms are open and the pomegranates are in bloom. There I will give you my love. The mandrakes give off a fragrance, and at our gates are pleasant fruits, all manners, new and old, which I have laid up for you, my beloved." So there we have it, Song of Solomon, chapter 7. So we're going to go back to the beginning and consider, first of all, chapter 6, verse 13. So there we have a group of people. The New King James says, "the beloved and his friends." But it seems like these are outsiders to me. Someone wanting the Shulamite to come back from her relationship. There's different ways of seeing this, and so I can't really be dogmatic about anything. So, in the previous verses, verses 11 and 12, she says, "I went down to the Garden of Nuts to see the verdure of the valley, to see whether the vine had budded and the pomegranates had bloomed. Before I was even aware, my soul had made me as the chariots of my noble people." And so some people see her going off in the garden previously. She's leaving for a while to think some things. And then here Solomon is asking her to come back and return. If you remember the last lesson, I did not see this in this way. I think she is going down to test the love with Solomon. And she is there with Solomon. She is madly in love with Solomon. And I think it's interesting, verse 13 is the only time we have the word Shulamite in the book. And I think we've talked about that already. Shulamite literally is Mrs. Solomon. Sometimes you have it saying someone from Shunem. L and M, I think, were interchanged sometimes. But Shulamite, this is Mrs. Solomon. So return to us. We know you belong to him, but return. We want to look upon you. So she is madly in love with Solomon, but others see her beauty. And we have seen before, I've talked about this, that when someone is in love, it seems like her beauty shines more. I think about the song, "You Look So Good in Love." So others want to see her. Others want to experience her beauty. She was so beautiful. This could be the Shulamite now wondering, what would you see in the Shulamite? She is amazed that they find her attractive. More likely, I think, though, it is Solomon. As if, why do you want to see my wife? She is mine. You have no lot in her. She is not for you. People see it different ways. The Shulamite could be saying, what do you want to see in me? There are a lot of times women may be very beautiful, and yet they don't feel beautiful. They don't think they're beautiful, and they wonder why others think they are beautiful. And so some people see it that way, but I think it's more likely Solomon saying, what do you want to see in her? As if it were the dance of two camps, or literally the dance of Mahanaim. Some say this place, Mahanaim, was known for a sexual dance that would take place when warriors returned after a great battle victory. So many say it was a dance like this. Literally, though, it's the dance of two camps, if you want to translate it like that. So the idea might be that there are many people that are Googling over her, wanting to see her, aroused by her. The first place we read of Mahanaim is in Genesis chapter 32, and that's when Jacob wrestles with an angel. And so some people look at this and say that this is a place where angels actually come down. The dance of Mahanaim was considered someone so lovely that it was like an angelic being looking at her in this dance. And so whatever it is, we know that it was something that really attracted people. And in my understanding of this, Solomon is saying, this very attractive thing is not for you. And that begins what happens in chapter 7. Now, in English, we have this woman who is simply standing in front of Solomon, and she's completely naked, but she has sandals on. However, a lot of people mention the fact that in Hebrew, it is obvious that she's not only standing there, but she is actually dancing, performing some type of dance for her husband. We're going to talk about some of the ways they know that as we dig through the text. But if you remember back in the previous chapters, there was some type of disagreement, some type of hardship, and it might have started because Solomon stays out too late. Solomon has been spending too much time at work, and the Shulamite wants him to come home. That might be what started it, and you can go back to those lessons to see what we're talking about there. But if that is the case, that she wants him to come home sooner and have more respect for her, then she is not going to nag. She's not going to try to discipline him in some way. Instead, she is going to use a carrot instead of a stick. She is going to lure him home. And I feel like she is doing this so that he won't think of anything else during the day. He is going to be excited all day, wanting to come home to her. This might be the first part in a plan. The second part we're going to read later on in the chapter. They go out on a vacation, or she lures him again to spend time with her and her alone. There's a couple of songs that I think about. You've Got to Kiss an Angel Good Morning. People wonder how I get to be smiling all day, whatever. Kiss an Angel Good Morning and Love Her Like the Devil When You Get Back Home. And I also think about the song Ronnie Millsap, I'm Having Daydreams About Night Things in the Middle of the Afternoon. When she acts like this, I think this is the kind of person Solomon's going to be. He's going to be happy all day long. He is going to be thinking about her all day long. You've heard it said, you catch more with honey than you do with vinegar. While a lot of spouses will whine and complain about the way their spouse is acting or the things that their spouse is doing, that only pushes them further away. Instead, we need to think about what she does here and entice them to want to love you more. That's exactly what Jesus did. Even though we were enemies, he gave himself for us. He lived for us while we were ungodly, while we were acting in such a way that would push him away. He sacrificed for us. And that's what he teaches us to do. We talked about Luke 6 here recently. How when other people are mean to you, you should be nice to them. How much more your family? And so here we have verse 1. He says, how beautiful are your feet in sandals, O prince's daughter. The curves of your thighs are like jewels, the work of the hands of a skillful workman. Now, those who know Hebrew say that in Hebrew, and I'm just going on for what they say because I don't know Hebrew, but they say this idea of feet here is the idea of stepping as well. And so this indicates that she is moving her feet. So I mentioned she's dancing. So she's moving her feet, stepping around, and he is saying how beautiful her feet are. They are enticing to him. Not only that, but the word curves. The curves of your thighs are like jewels, the work of the hands of skillful workmen. The word curves, they say, implies the vibration or moving back and forth movement, which indicates, again, that she is dancing. The curves and the vibrations, the feet stepping, the motion, the circular motion, some people say, is like a bending, like ornaments that were swinging on a chain. Now, she is doing this to entice him to want to build his love for her. I think we can learn a warning here, a lesson. This tells us that we should be careful how we dress and how we move, especially women, because men are more visual than women are. But this shows us how women can act to give their husbands pleasure, which is a good thing. But it also tells us how women can act to give others pleasure when it's not a good thing, when it's not their spouse. Lust is committing adultery in the heart. And there's many ways we can keep from doing that. But one way is to not provoke that in other people. And also, I would say, according to this text, wives need to be fulfilling the God-given desires of their husbands. And husbands, I think, and wives both need to communicate how they look and how they can treat one another to pleasure each other. Don't be aroused by other women, only your spouse. And I would say this goes into movies. A lot of movies try to entice people by showing sexual things and women provocatively dressed. That is not good. This is for the marriage relationship and the marriage relationship only. Verse 2. Your navel is a rounded goblet. It lacks no blended beverage. Your waist is a heap of wheat set about with lilies. Now I'm going to say, I'm not going to talk about it, but I'm going to say that there are many people who don't think this is talking about the belly button, which lacks no blended beverage or spiced wine. And that's just all I'm going to say. They believe it's talking about another part of her body. It goes on to say, The waste is like a heap of wheat set about with lilies. Some people think the waste looked like a heap of wheat because the color was the same, because the way wheat was bundled in an hourglass type shape. Others see the idea of sustenance here, that her body can provide for him what he needs. And so both of those, I think, would be a right way of understanding it. He goes on to say, your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of gazelle. Your neck is like an ivory tower. Your eyes like the pools of Heshbon by the gate of Beth-Rimmon. Your nose is like the Tower of Babylon, which looks toward Damascus. We've seen a lot of these things before. And so we have it again. Your breasts are like two fawns. And we talked about how dealing with two fawns, you have to be gentle. You want to be tender. You want to play with them. They're cuddly. That's the way it should be. I think it's significant that a woman's breasts are not just for breastfeeding. The book of Proverbs in chapter 5, we have it very plainly. Her breasts are to satisfy you always. Her husband, always. They need to be available. This is what he wants. Your neck is like an ivory tower. Your eyes are like the pools of Heshbon by the gate of Beth-Rimmon. Your nose is like a tower of Babylon, which looks toward Damascus. Some see the idea of the ivory tower in the neck being white, which was desired. But in all this, I think an idea of prestige, magnificence in the way he is describing her. She is straight. You think about someone who is ashamed or someone who is sneaky. I don't know. They're bent over. They're not strong and confident. She is standing up straight and erect, and she is powerful. Her eyes are clear like the pools of Heshbon. And so this is the things I see here. Verse 5, your head crowns you like Mount Carmel. The hair of your head is like purple. A king is held captive by your tresses. Your head is like Mount Carmel. Again, prestigious, maybe even powerful. Standing up erect. Her hair is like purple. I don't think she had purple hair, but it was like purple, being royal. This was very costly material. And so this is what he sees in her. And then he says, a king is held captive by your tresses. The king can't look away, can't look anywhere else. He is held captive because her beauty is so great. And again, he's probably going to think of her all day. Earlier, when he is talking about how beautiful she is, in chapter 4, I believe it was, he mentioned seven things, which we talked about being the perfect number. And this was from the head down. And now he mentions 10 things, which again is a number of completion, a number of perfection. So this tells me again that as the relationship has been growing, he finds her still as perfect as she was on the day of their wedding. But now even more, there is more love, more things that he appreciates with her. And again earlier, he starts at the top and ends with the breast. Now he starts at the feet and might be drawn to the feet first because of how they're moving. I don't know. But he starts at the feet and goes up. The dancing seems to end at verse 5. We don't have any more words that show she's dancing from here on. And then verse 6, he summarizes her and says, how fair and how pleasant you are, O love, with your delights. So a couple of things I want to say here is he sees her as pleasant and fair. He sees her as beautiful. We need to always look at our spouse as beautiful. No one else should catch our eye like our spouse. In saying that, it is our duty to make ourselves beautiful to our spouse. He says, with your delights, the things that you are doing to please me, this is wonderful. This is great. Are we doing things to please our spouse? Going on, verse 7. This stature of yours is like a palm tree, and your breasts are like its clusters. Now, some people say that the palm tree here means that she is standing up straight and erect. Maybe she's skinny. But the top of the palm tree comes out, and it bears fruit, and your breasts are like these clusters. It may be the way that she is standing. This is what she looks like. I think it's interesting that the word palm tree is literally the word Tamar in Hebrew. Tamar is known for, or there's two different people named Tamar in the Bible. In Genesis chapter 38, we have a story with Tamar. And also David's daughter in 2 Samuel. I can't remember the exact verses, the exact chapter. Around verses 13, 14, you have the account of Tamar, David's daughter. Both of these accounts, with Judah and Tamar in Genesis 38, and David's daughter Tamar, are sexual stories. And so just saying the palm tree might have sexual overtones. But some people see this as the way she is standing, what she looks like. Other people just see this, saying this, because of what's said in verse 8 and the action that is involved. Verse 8 says, I said, I will go up the palm tree. I will take hold of its branches. Now let your breasts be like clusters of the vine, the fragrance of your breath like apples. So, I don't think many of us have ever seen people go up a pine tree, but you can imagine someone wrapping their legs around the pine tree and working their way up what they would look like. And so this is a very graphic picture here. The purpose, again, of the breast here, Proverbs 5 and verse 19, is to satisfy the husband. I'm going to take hold of its branches, and its clusters are going to be like clusters of the vine. The breasts are going to be like this. So it's pretty graphic, pretty amazing that you're reading about this stuff in the Bible. Most people would never think about this. But this is what's pleasing to God. This is the way God made us. He goes on to say that her breath is like apples. It's sweet. It's pleasant. Now, this could be the way that her breast smells. Maybe she puts something in her mouth to physically sweeten her breath. But the breath often in the Bible is that which comes out of the mouth. And that is the words that we speak. The spirit that comes out. And so no matter if this is physical or not, Christians should always be gentle, be pleasant with their words, helping one another. And now I understand that there are times when you have to be harsh with your words, when discipline is needed and so forth. But Christians should be sweet with their words, seasoned with salt. going on, verse 9. Let the roof of your mouth be like the best wine. And then she apparently says, the wine goes down smoothly for my beloved, moving gently the lips of sleepers. So, obviously, this is another indication of passionate kissing. And I mentioned this before. They do not do kissing like this until they are married in chapter 4. Not till then does he talk about what the inside of her mouth tastes like. I believe that is wrong before marriage. That provokes lust. Lust is obviously a sin. You shouldn't do things that provoke lust. So here we have another indication of passionate kissing. So let what comes out of your mouth be sweet. And I guess I could say let him in. So here she starts talking. He does most of the talking so far, all the talking so far. But she says, the wine goes down smoothly for my beloved, moving gently the lips of sleepers. It's almost like she interrupts him and tells him how much she is enjoying it. It goes down smoothly. Now, many women, sadly, only give themselves grudgingly. Some give simply because the Bible commands them to. Some don't give, and they push their husband away. Some simply act like a willing victim, just wanting to get it over with. But she goes down smoothly for her beloved. Like wine, and it's gliding over the lips of sleepers. This is how easy she is enjoyed. She is giving herself to him, doing the things that she wants. He does not have to work for this. But in this case, he can be extremely passive, as if he is asleep and she is going in. She is taking the initiative. She is working at this for him. I mentioned this at the very beginning, but it's significant to me that this is called the Song of Solomon, and it's all about the woman. This is his song. This is his finest song. This is what makes him great. This is his hit. This is what he's known for, and it's her. So going on, verse 10. I am my beloved's, and his desire is toward me. Okay, so she takes delight in the fact that she belongs to him. I am my beloved's. Whatever he wants, I will do. I belong to him. Whatever you want, baby, that's what I'm going to do. I am yours. And he greatly wants me. That's what she takes delight in. His desire is toward me. Now, I want you to notice a couple of things here. In Genesis chapter 3 and verse 16, we have the punishment given to Eve. And in that punishment, it says, your desire will be toward your husband, but he will rule over you. We have the exact same phrase of Genesis 3, verse 16, in chapter 7 of Genesis, in verse 4, where God talks to Cain and says, sin is crouching at the door, and its desire is for you, but you must rule over it. So, the desire being for you. So, in Genesis, the preposition is looking upward. Sin and the woman have the desire to usurp the person. Here, the preposition is looking downward. His desire is for me, not to usurp me, not to be over me, but he desires you to please you, to want to be around you, to have things to do with you, and so forth. So I think that's pretty neat. Now, I also think it's neat in this verse to notice the progression that is made from similar verses in the past. Here, she says, I am my beloved's, and his desire is toward me. In chapter 2 and verse 16, we read, my beloved is mine, and I am his. He feeds his flock among the lilies. So there she is most concerned about, my beloved is mine. I own him, but also he owns me. But I own him first in chapter 2 and verse 16. Then you get to chapter 6 and verse 3, and it says, I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. He feeds his flock among the lilies. And so first there, she says, I am my beloved's. Now what's stressed is I belong to him, and he also belongs to me. And then when we get to chapter 7, we have, again, this idea of I belong to him, but nothing is said of him belonging to her. It's just his desire is toward me. This is what motivates him, what motivates her now. I belong to him, and he greatly loves me. I think that's pretty neat. First, she's more excited about the fact that she has a man. Second, she's happier to give herself to him. And now it seems like she's completely lost in how much it thrills her to belong to him and excite him and make him happy, make him want her. I think this shows the progression of love. And this is the way God loves us. 1 John 4:19, we love because he first loved us. As we grow in Christ, at first we might be excited we have a Savior. We get more pleasure as we grow in Christ, giving ourselves to him and delighting him and being what he wants us to be. That's what eventually thrills us, doing things for him. Now, I mentioned earlier, if it is the case that she wants Solomon to desire her more so that he comes home and has respect, first, she does this dance. This is the way she's going to treat him. And I don't think this is a one-time thing. This is a regular thing. He is always going to want to come home. He is always going to do whatever pleases her because she pleases him so much. The second thing that she comes up with is taking a little vacation. Starting in verse 11, she says, "Come, my beloved, let us go forth to the field. Let us lodge in the villages. Let us get up early to the vineyards. Let us see if the vine has budded, whether the grape blossoms are open and the pomegranates are in bloom. There I will give you my love. The mandrakes give off a fragrance, and at our gate are pleasant fruits, all manner, new and old, which I have laid up for you, my beloved." So here again we have her enticing him. But it's a call to go away, to go on a vacation, if you will. Let us get out of the hassle of life, and let's just be alone together. I think it's interesting as we think about this. Look at all the times the Jews were commanded to rest from labor. You know, they had to rest from labor every Sabbath. All their holidays, the special feast, were days of rest, days of getting together, leaving their normal work. The 7 days that they took off for a wedding, anytime there was a wedding, they usually took off 7 days. We need to take time to rest and to think about things and to take care of the important things. Because so often we let the urgent things drown out the important things. We can't let that happen. There are so many things that need to be done, but what is important has to be done. Sometimes we get so busy in life, we can't take time to just be alone with our spouse. Many people say we need a date night once a week or so forth. And I think that's important as well. And so she says, you know, we're too busy, let's go away. And she entices him to go away. She makes a way and a time for them to be together. If there are things that need to be done at work or whatever, they can wait. So this is now plan B. She lures him in the bedroom, if you will, and now she lures him to go away on vacation. He needs to get away from work. So again, instead of nagging about schedules, she takes the initiative, and again, she uses a carrot instead of a stick. Verse 12, she flirts with him. "Let us get up early. Let us go out. I'm going to give you my love there." He is driven to go, no matter how urgent other things are. He wants to be with her. She goes on to say, the mandrakes give off a fragrant. mandrakes were used as an aphrodisiac. They were used, considered to make one fertile. They were used as a lovemaking thing. And we see this in other places in the Bible. So again, she's flirting with him, making her want her. At our gates are pleasant fruits. There's going to be good things waiting for you there. And I don't think this is necessarily talking about actual fruit. In fact, the word fruits is not in the original. At our gates are pleasant. There are pleasant things at the gate. And she says, all manner, new and old. New and old can be the idea of the same pleasures that they enjoyed earlier are going to still be there for you. But not only that, we're going to do new things, exciting things, to make our love stronger. So they will do new things together to keep their love fresh and exciting, and they're going to keep on doing the old things that they have always loved. And it says that she has laid up these things for him. I don't know if this is a spur-of-the-moment trip, or if they've been planning the set date for a while, but she has been thinking of things she can do for him for a while. She has laid up these things. So this is pretty amazing here. Pretty good stuff, I'm going to say. Chapter 7 is great. And it continues on a little in chapter 8. But I guess we will wait for that for the next lesson. I have really enjoyed this study. And I hope you are enjoying it as well. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're listening. As always, I try to leave you with some type of information on how to get a hold of us. If you'd like to contact us, you have a couple of ways you can do that. You can always email us at mornings@tgrn.org. You can email me at steven@tgrn.org. That's steven@tgrn.org. Or you can call us, 1-844-367-8476. That's 1-844, the word 4, F-O-R, T-G-R-N. We would love to hear from you. And again, I hope you have enjoyed these lessons as much as I do. I do appreciate you listening. Thank you so much for being here.